Musician Les Claypool is considered one of the top rock bassists in the world. And while critics consider him a bit of a musical oddball, he's equal parts odd and prolific. He's got nearly a half dozen projects or bands going on at any given time, but he's best known for the group he founded nearly 20 years ago, Primus. Here was a risk driver. Songs like Jerry Was a Race Car Driver got lots of airplay on MTV and college radio in the 90s, but by the start of the next decade, Les Claypool and his bandmates were ready for a hiatus.
Which was just sort of a fancy way of saying we were all tired of each other and tired of the music and not getting anything done.
Les Claypool didn't sit still during those years. He published a novel, produced a satirical movie about psychedelic jam bands, and even got into winemaking. Les Claypool spoke to us recently from member station KRCB in Santa Rosa, California. He told us that eventually, after performing with other bands, he couldn't resist the pull of Primus.
I bought this old Airstream motorhome and started driving up and down the coast playing bars with a band I called the Frog Brigade. It was one of those I needed to jump right back on the horse, otherwise I would have gone insane.
I want to get to your sound, because the thing that makes Primus Primus, frankly, is your bass playing in a lot of ways. And first, can we get a little demonstration of what it is that people typically think of bass playing and maybe what it is that you do technique-wise? And no one can see your fingers, so they won't steal your technique or anything.
I can't even see my fingers.
Yeah.
My style has developed out of necessity, you know, being in a band like Primus where I, to an extent, am playing two parts. I'm playing like a rhythm guitar part. I'm playing like a rhythm guitar part and the low part. But I did come from a very traditional background. In fact, when I was between the ages of 19 and 21, played a lot of biker bars in Northern California in a band called the Tommy Crank Band, which was this old R&B band where we'd play. And I was the youngest guy in the band by far.
You were in an R&B band, really?
Well, it was like Wilson Pickett, Booker T and the MGs, Sam and Dave.
The real old that sound. School.
Play 3 to 4 sets a night, 3 to 5 nights a week, and I got pretty proficient at...
So I think maybe what's different about Primus, I guess, is moving that voice, the bass voice, to the front.
I've always said the bass just happens to be the crayon I picked out of the box. Should I have picked the accordion or a guitar or trumpet or whatever it may be, the sounds in my head are still the same sounds. It's just I picked the bass crayon to draw my pictures with.
The river water diverts to other places to nurture Central Valley seeds. The northern water that sloshes desert fairways fulfills SoCal golfers' needs. The mighty chook that used to run the rivers to the grounds where they would spawn.
So let's talk a little bit about the pictures you're drawing in the new album. Lyrically, it tells you sort of off-kilter stories about people who are maybe a little bit down on their luck. And the song Last Salmon Man paints a really vivid picture of a solitary fisherman. What inspired this song?
Well, I've made reference to this subject over the years. Living up here around Bodega Bay, I've been watching the fishing industry, especially the salmon fishing industry, wane over the years, and I just see the plight of these guys going the way of the lumberjack so that we could have golf courses down in Palm Springs. So Last Salmon Man is about the loss of a legacy, a family legacy. The Last Salmon Man of the McGonagall clan.
Jimmy watched as the bulk of the fleet sold their boats or moved away. But after the stroke, he promised to his father he'd do his best.
You said that the tracks on this album are like having conversations with yourself. How do you go about writing?
It's always different. If it's a collaborative effort like Primus, a lot of times it's us getting together in a room and making sounds and recording the pasta that sticks to the wall, so to speak. Sometimes it's me taking a lyric and building a riff around the lyric and building the song around that particular lyric.
What's a song that you think is a good example of that?
Jilly's on Smack, which is a guitar
really,
riff.
I really like that song.
This very haunting guitar part right before the drums come in. And then digging through my little notepad, I found Jilly's on Smack and She Won't Be Coming Back from the Holidays, and I just sort of expanded on that. It's somewhat based on a friend of ours that disappeared into the world of heroin, and every now and again she pops her head up and we see how she's doing. But I wanted to write from the perspective of friends and family, you know, so Jilly's on Smack, She Won't Be Coming Back for the Holidays, you know, what's Grandma thinking about Jilly not being there? Does she know where she is? And just the notion of how addiction affects the family.
Les, one thing I really enjoy about your music is that I feel like you have a lot of fun making things sound different and really are willing to stretch and experiment with your voice and just with throwing all kinds of sounds into the music. Where does that come from? I mean, were you a kid who kind of played around with the tape recorder? I did that. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, I did play around with the tape recorder. As I got into the recording process and the frustration of trying to get the sounds in my head through an engineer or a producer, I learned the craft myself and have acquired all this old vintage gear which fills this little building on my property. It's a straight-up audio mad scientist's dream, and it is very exciting for me to go out there and start banging on things and cranking on old pieces of machinery, recording equipment, and I'm obsessed with drum sounds and percussion sounds, so I'm always shoving a mic into some place it probably shouldn't be shoved.
Is there a song on the album that you think gets at that you really just let yourself go, because there wasn't the same kind of pressures as there was 10 years ago? I'm thinking of a song like Eternal Consumption Engine.
Pressure's been gone for quite a long time. You know, the past 10 years of all the records I've made, it's all been whatever I've wanted to do, and it's unbelievably liberating, and it's a wonderful place to be as far as a creative person. You know, I've had conversations recently with some friends that are filmmakers and writers, you know, screenwriters and whatnot, and I just hear all these tales of people coming in and stepping on their work, and it makes me step back and realize how fortunate I am to be able to do what I do.
Les Claypool, he's the founder and bassist for the band Primus. The band's new CD is called Green Naugahyde. It's out now. Les Claypool, I'm looking forward to the next incarnation. Looking forward to what you do next.
Fantastic.
Head to the Walmart store. Eternal consumption. Living high on the greasy hog. Eternal consumption. As long as I don't deport my job. Eternal consumption.
This is NPR's Weekend Edition, directed this week by Gemma Waters and produced by Ned Wharton, Peter Breslow, Elaine Heinzman, Claudine Abade, Hansi Lo Wong, Chris Benderev, and Amy Held. Our interns are Jewel Johnson and Colleen Shalby. Jeffrey Bennett and Dee Dee Skanky edited the program. Our technical director is Burke Hun. Kee Maleski is our reference librarian. Melissa Goh is our web producer. Our show was produced today by Tom Bullock and edited by Barry Hardiman. Our supervising producer is Sarah Lucy Oliver. Bridget Kelly is the senior supervising producer of Weekend Edition. And today, we send our best wishes out to one of our faithful producers, Kimberly Adams, who's turning her talents, temporarily anyway, to NPR's Washington desk. We will miss her energy, poise, and her sense of merriment. I'm Audie Cornish.